Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon, and a double good afternoon. Good afternoon to everyone who is not a teacher or a police officer, and a double good afternoon to teachers and police officers that are not, struggling with financial institutions. You know, we don't call it debt anymore. No? We call it financial services. But for some reason, the IMFs and World Bank, that's just debt. That's not what we're here to talk about. What we are here to talk about is migrant labor, looking at it from the African perspective, African Union in collaboration basically with the International Labor Organization. So, migrant labor. So, it's exactly what it sounds like, migrant labor. So, people migrate in search of opportunities. Look at it as, urban to, actually it's the other way around, rural to urban migration, in search of greener pasture, opportunity, connection, whatever it is that you want to call it. Except, migrant labor is like, rural to urban migration, promax. That's how you should basically look at it. The African Union just brought up their statistics on migrant labor. The International Labor Organization publicized theirs. I think so that was February or March, but somewhere in February. These two are working together, and the report are somewhat very similar in terms of the concerns that the global community would like to address in relations to migrant labor. Now, before we get to the International Labour Organization of the definition of what they describe as migrant labour, and then we'll come to the African Union report on it. Then we just go through a few of the observations that they have made, and also we have an audio that is coming from one wonderful Namibian who was kind enough to talk to us all the way from Germany. So she basically falls in this category, and also she has, she was kind enough to give us, to take a few minutes out of a busy life, I imagine, to share with us a few pointers on what it means to be in away from home in search of opportunities. And of course, this is not rocket science. I mean, we talk about youth unemployment and lack of opportunities, brain drain, especially on an African continent level. But what this points to is that I think migration is one of those things that that constantly reminds us human beings that we are not just humans. Biology is right. We are all animals, and that's not we are all animals, and that's not to mean it in a more like a derogatory way, but it's just think biology here. We all animals, and we are always chasing after something, and sometimes the place the way we find ourselves, what we are looking for is not there, so we go somewhere else in search of that particular thing. And in the very same way that we see, birds migration, fish migration, animal migration, the Marriott Group of Hotel faced a lot of bad publicity at the beginning of this year, because they, I think it was at the beginning of this year when they opened one of their luxurious resorts, at a very crucial animal migration crossing point in Kenya. So a lot of tourists, a lot of people are basically divided both in and outside of Kenya with regards to whether or not that was a brilliant idea or a very dumb one. And one thing that was pointed out by a lot of people that were basically proponents of the facility was that they received building permits to set this piece of infrastructure up. So if the country, or especially the guys at the top of the government structure, if they didn't like it, why did they give them all this, all the authorities to build a multi-million dollar, if not a multi-billion dollar piece of infrastructure? But here's the thing. I'm more on the side of not disturbing migration patterns, because animals have a natural migration compass basically installed. Birds, if you look at birds, for example, the birds that we see here for the most part of the year, the reason why you have a certain parts of the year, especially during winter where the food is scarce, the reason why you don't see a lot of them is because a lot of them are on, migrate to some parts of Italy, some parts of Spain. That's where you find them, that's where you find them, in summer, because of the whole division of, when there's winter in the northern hemisphere, summer in the southern hemisphere, and when there's summer in the northern hemisphere, there's winter in the southern hemisphere. Now that we are, now that we are headed towards summer, and people are, running to the gym to acquire a summer body, and after eating like crazy the whole winter, not judging. I'm one of those people that who is, actually can be described as a weapon of mass food destruction. So at the end of the day, the point I'm trying to make here is that the same behavior in terms of movement and searching for and searching for food that we see in animals, birds, and fish is can somewhat be associated, more like described as equivalent to this to migration patterns that we see in people. And it's not a bad thing. And people migrate for all kinds of reasons, actually. Some might migrate in search of opportunities, and some migrate in search of that one. I don't know who, you know what? Not judging, but really? Right. Well, thanks to online meteor, the one now, aka dating or marriage, some people meet online and they live happily ever after halfway across the planet. And some people leave their countries just because they have a lot of money and they want to live in a different country and they just want to find out how it feels like and all that. But the two main reasons meeting someone you fell for and you get married and live happily ever after halfway across the planet, that's somewhat voluntary. And living just voluntarily with a lot of your money to go and live in a different country, again, that is voluntary. But there are some types of pushes that push people out, out of their homes to actually go, go to different countries. It's more like it's a forced thing. And the two main forces that basically force people out of their countries and go to different parts of the world in search of opportunities. One, opportunities. Two, conflicts. Now, when you look at and the two reports, by the way, you can just they're readily available on the internet. Whether you're looking for the African Union one or the International Labour Organization one, you can find them all plain there. But one thing that there's a lot of verbosity going on in the way that they're describing things in these two reports, and these are reports that that are brought out, I believe, annually for the African Union version. And one thing that you see is that, okay, the very simple way of picturing it is, think of nations' leaders. You think your presidents, your prime ministers, your kings and queens, for those that are still under monarchy. Think of the nations' leaders as parents, and then think of the citizens of these different countries as children of those parents in their respective executive offices. And now, when you think of them as parents living in one neighborhood, And then you picture it as these parents, just like all parents, would like to, you know, they would like their kids to have friends, you know, to go out there and have friends to chill out with, to go and play with, to go and do stuff with. And sometimes, in the very same way that you see with kids from different parents or from different homesteads are playing, sometimes the playing goes all well, sometimes the sleepovers go all well, sometimes they get into fights and parents have to come in and resolve the issue. You know, that's when they start going, you know, it was your child that started this. So now the thing is, parents whose children are friends, they put in the effort if they have, if they don't know each other already, they put in the effort to get to know each other so that they know that when it's 6 o'clock in the evening and my child is not at home, where is he most likely to be? Now, you can't call the police every time your child doesn't show up at home, at home on time. At least you must, where is he most likely to be? It's 6 o'clock, so surely he can't be at school. So I don't remember when last he was at church. So he's definitely at this person's house. Let me call them and find out. You call the friend's house, the parents of your child's friend picks up and you have a conversation. Oh no, he's here. He's just fine. They're just playing. I'll drop them off, after dinner. He wants to spend a night. They want to have a sleepover playing video games or whatever. You know, maybe they have a movie marathon and stuff like that. So that communication of, between parents, with regards to trying to find out the well-being of their kids whenever they are not at home or whenever they are out there interacting with other friends or with other parents' kids. This is basically what the whole idea behind, just picture it in a very simple way. That's a very simple way that I'm picturing it. Now, here's the thing. In the very same way that you have two friends, you know, they start fighting. They start fighting and the parents have to come in and clear the mess. Every now and then, people that leave their countries and find themselves in different countries do from time to time get into trouble. And now there is a diplomatic incident, so the two governments have to talk to each other. And that's where international law becomes a very amazing thing. But before we get into too much details, I just wanted to describe a very simple picture that at least I came up with, when it comes to looking at the whole migrant labor discussion. So, what is this whole migrant labor? International Labor Organization. Before we get to the audio, I'll bring you the audio in a few. So, how is the International Labor Organization? How are they defining this? In case you don't want to go with my definition of parents and animal migration, especially the parents part, in case you want to go with the International Labor Organization's point of view on this topic, not a comedian. Homran Helmut, Eagle FM. Moving on. Labor migration is a term used to describe the movement or slash migration of people from one place to another for the purpose of employment or finding work. Same WhatsApp group. Such purposes are generally called migrant such persons are generally called migrant workers. Labor migration includes various types of migrant workers, ranging from the less skilled contract laborers to semi-skilled and highly skilled migrants. These are these are the people that, Helmut and Dwight like to reference every time that we talk about brain drain on the African continent, where every time that something is taking place in the African continent, was that late last year or early this year when Meta, the parent company of Facebook, had a squabble with the Nigerian government to the point where Meta was threatening to withdraw, to pull out of Nigeria, and a lot of experts were now trying to assess what are the economic pros and cons of Meta pulling out of the Nigerian market. And this is not just this is one of Africa's biggest market. You're talking, and you have South Africa, Angola, Nigeria is on that list of the biggest markets on the African continent. Now, when Meta was threatening to pull out of Nigeria, a lot of experts were trying to look at the pros and cons of the tech giant leaving the Nigerian market, the economic impact that would have, especially on the youth that depend on the platform to make money. Think your content creators, for example. One lady who was a tech expert who was being interviewed on that particular subject, she's Nigerian. She was being interviewed, I think, out of London. So those are techie brain type of people. She's Nigerian by nationality, ethnicity, and all that. But she finds herself in Nigeria. In London. That's where she works, or she still works there. I have no idea. Now, here's the International Labour Organization. The International Labour Organization, or ILO, defines migrant labour as a person who migrates or has migrated from one country to another with the view of being employed by someone other than him or herself, including a person regularly admitted or a migrant for employment. Now, this is the part now I found very interesting, and to say the least, because the International Labour Organization point out a very interesting definition of who qualifies or what constitutes a migrant labour. A person who migrates or has migrated from one country to another with a view to be employed by someone other than themselves. So that means if you go to a different country and become self-employed, aren't you a migrant labor? Which made me go like, you guys are the experts. You guys are the experts. Now, there are two main key phrases that you actually have to know, here. In the world of credit, aka, debt or borrowing or debt services, you hear the words like creditor and debtor. I give you money, you owe me. So, I'm your creditor. You owe me a debt. So time to pay up when the agreed time, comes along. But the equivalent of a creditor and debtor to this, more like a landlord and tenant type of a description in terms of technical language is that in the context of labor migration, generally the countries where migrants come from is called the sending countries. And the countries where people head towards are called destination countries. So, in this case, then, these are two titles that belong to pretty much every country, because, it's safe to say, actually, it's that obvious. You can be both a sending country and a destination country all at once. What I mean by that? What I mean is you have Namibians that are working outside Namibia. So, for those guys, the countries that they are working in, those are their destination countries, which makes Namibia, their sending countries. Those countries, like Germany, for example, if you have any relative that's working in Germany, those are migrant workers. If you have any relatives that are working in Angola, that are working in Nigeria, that are working in, I almost said Sudan, I hope they were not employed by the Rapid Support Force, because that's not what we are talking about here. Definitely not. And when I say DRC, we are not talking about being hired by M23. That's a whole different type of employment. Terrible type of, occupational hazard, Promax. Now, So you have sending country and sending country and destination country. Namibia, for example, can be a a destination country for all those people that have left their countries and they are working here. So in that way, for non-Namibians that are working here, Namibia is a destination country. For all non-Namibians that are working outside in different countries, all those countries to Namibia, those are receiving countries. Now that we have, at least I hope we have ironed out the technical jargon, let's get to the audio on the other side of the following break. Home Run with Helmut and Dwight and shortly David. On your favorite talk radio station, and that is Eagle FM.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ningefa Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honoreta Time, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileco, Berewa, Brahetatu Natu, Bali, O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
Welcome back. We are 25 minutes into the hour of four, and you're still listening to Eagle FM. Thank you for tuning in wherever you are tuned in from. And we are sure to keep you company, and as for Home Run in particular, until the hour of seven. Now, before we continue with this discussion, or more like to continue with this discussion, we're going to take a listen to an audio of a journalist who took the time to speak to us from Germany on this particular subject, and that is a journalist working in Germany, Okeri Ngushinado. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, and if I don't, please don't murder me. So let's take a listen, and we'll continue on the other side. Stay tuned.
But obviously, besides the climate change discussions, which are also contained in the report that I shared with you, Okeri, specifically, we're going to be looking at migrant labor and a recent report, obviously, that gives some point of discussion to our talk today, which was the recent AU migrant labor report, which was launched here in Windhoek, but technically it was printed and published back in 2025, collected data and everything in 2022. If we start off from that particular discussion, just for our listeners to know, you are currently a Namibian / African who is not working on the continent, but actually in Europe. Dimensions from that, I'm obviously going to start off with the basics, you know. Why did you decide to pursue your career in Germany or in Europe, off the continent, basically?
Well, I think for me, my decision was sort of easily influenced by the fact that I learned German. So I am in Germany. I'm working as a journalist in Germany. And in high school, I learned German. So for me, I was very much involved in the language, in the culture. And of course, knowing the history of Namibia and also knowing that we have a German population, it was kind of very natural for me to interact and speak to them and learn a bit more about the country. So for me, when I kind of looked at the prospects of where I would travel to or where to go abroad. I mean, you know, Namibians either go to the US, Canada, or the UK. But for me,
it's suspicious in those 3 days. but for me,
I thought, okay, Germany would be good. I wouldn't really struggle with the language too much. And also seeing based on the opportunity that I got, and also when I was researching on journalist opportunities, I think for me, I was like, okay, this would be a good fit.
Yeah. Just to help our listeners, obviously, part of the skill sets that you've developed, you obviously also went to university. One particular thing I wanted to ask also is something that I've also seen with my own personal family was usually, it's how quickly you can, you cited the English thing, the language thing, but how quickly you'll be able to adjust to the society, right?
I mean, that is a different thing. I'm still adjusting. You know, I've been here for nearly 6 years, and it's something that I'm slowly building a community of sorts in Germany, but I think language
what?
Is...
Wait, what? You're building a community?
You know, it's kind of like building like my own little small safe space here in Germany.
Yeah.
The language is part of one of the hurdles, of course. I've heard that so many times speaking to other foreigners as well in Germany. The language is definitely one of the biggest hurdles as well. And for me, yes, it did help the fact that I did speak it previously. Mm. But of course, when you get here, it's kind of this, the social elements and meeting people and also adjusting to either the climate as well, mm. or adjusting to kind of like how things work here, the work culture or just like the social culture as well. There's so many things, that, elements that you have to adjust when you're in the country. And I mean, it's when you're applying for things, when you're in Namibia, that is the furthest thing on your mind. You're kind of just like, am I going to get paid well? And am I going to manage with a visa to arrive?
Mm-hmm. Which are, in many cases, the core concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the next question, okay. This is obviously going to be a very definitive one, because usually in some cases you get some Namibians that decide, you know, I've been there for 5-10 years, let me rather come back to Namibia. Will you in future, or are you possibly planning to come back or move back to Namibia and then basically, you know?
ShopRite's birthday is in the major league with major low prices. Get 4kg real good IQF chicken, mixed portion, only $194.99. 5kg marathon white sugar for $99.99. And 5kg top score super maize meal, just $69.99. Valid until 23 August 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's major league birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 and weekly gift cards with ShopRite. Buy any 3 participating products, WhatsApp the code on your till slip, and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite.
Come back, move back to Namibia, and then basically, you know, reinvest your skill sets and your expertise back in the country.
Yeah, it's, you sound a bit like my mother told you to ask that question.
I have to ask that because I've seen so many Namibians.
Mm-hmm.
Besides my sister, I've seen so many Namibians experience the same particular rebound, you know?
Yeah, of course.
They could even be like a husband and wife combination who moves overseas and then they come back.
I mean, it's an interesting question because I get this question a lot from my family. And when I came here, I had this naive mindset of like, oh, I will be here for 3-5 years. And then I think I would have grown enough. And then I'll go back home and kind of live my life in Namibia again. Mm. But now again, like I said, 6 years here, I'm still adjusting and I'm still also getting comfortable in Germany. Mm. Yes, I would always like to return home. You know, it's Namibia, it's home, it's the people that I know, it's comfort. But then I think there's a part of me as well when it comes to my faith that always says that, you know, it's up to God's will. If it's time for me to return, I will return. Mm. But for now, it's kind of like... I don't see it yet. I don't have a definitive time when I would return, but I think if it's time and if I've been in Germany for long enough, then I will return. But I would always want to have the option of kind of coming back. That I think that for me is always my biggest wish, to go back to Namibia and be like, okay, then I can kind of hopscotch in between both countries.
Yeah. The reason also that feeds into some of those particular dimensions is that training usually is, which is university, and sometimes the opportunity that you already mentioned is some of the motivating factors. The next particular question about economic difference between Namibia and Germany, obviously it's an obvious question I would mm-hmm. ask, but there are nuances, specifically like way of life or cost of living, that you could compare currently now in Germany versus here in Namibia. Are these particular differences based on opportunities and the standard of living? Does it include safety, or are there more factors that can even convince an African migrant to say, hey, you know what? Europe does, or another position, another place does look better than my current home country.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see how I can answer this. I mean,
okay. Let's start from career prospects.
I mean, in that regard, it honestly depends on what field that you're in. For example, with me, with journalism, I kind of researched journalism in Germany, and that's when I came kind of across this, the company that I'm currently working for, and which does international media. And I think that for me was perfect, because then I wanted to not do news or journalism in German. I wanted to do it in English. But I have come across other Africans that, of course, are doing different jobs, whether it's kind of labor, whether they're in the medicine field, or whether they're in IT or anything like that. It honestly depends on what career path you're in that kind of allows you to have a good job and also a good salary in Germany. If I compare it to when I was back home, of course, like, my salary is definitely better, but then it also understanding that in Germany there is a high cost of living, and the salary is well, and you do get paid well, and then because it also balances with a high cost of living in the country, and also depending on which town or city that you're in. If you're in the bigger cities like in Berlin or Cologne or like Munich, things are quite pricey. But for me, I'm kind of in, it's not a small town, but I'm in Bonn, which is close to Cologne. So housing can be expensive. And most people here in Germany, there is such a big culture of shared apartments. If you're not married, that you just live in a shared apartment with 3-4 other people. And then that kind of helps with splitting costs. So yes, pay-wise, you do get better opportunities here in Germany. But again, it just honestly depends on the field and also the town and also your lifestyle. Because if you like spending money, then of course, things balance off.
You've got to take the hit, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
If we obviously look at the aspect of like safety, and I know Germany is very strong on like public transport, if I can assume that, versus in Namibia. In Namibia, we're still trying to, I don't know, slug our way through something. We know what it is. It's primarily that, you know, there's underinvestment. But for example, those nuanced things that you experience, like reliable public transport, what does that look like in comparison to back home?
Definitely having public transport like the bus and the trams here helps a lot with cutting down on costs, because I usually pay monthly for my transport ticket. And the good thing about that transport ticket, it also allows me to kind of take original train from one place to another, because there's the Deutschland ticket, the Germany ticket, which kind of allows you to take only the regional trains, not the fast moving trains to go from like town to town, which kind of helps with affordability. I don't have a car here in Germany, so of course I save up on fuel. And then safety wise, it's also, I mean, you can take the train from after 12 or 1 o'clock in the evening. It's you do have to be safe, but for the most part, it is safe compared to when I'm back home. If I'm going out and I know that I'm coming home at a specific time, it's either I ask my friend to take me home or I will take a Yango or something like that. But then here, especially it was a strange concept for me in the first year when I was in Germany. You know, going home at 2 o'clock, I was like, oh, okay, will I be safe? You know, do I have to take an Uber or something like that? And it was relatively safe, depending also on when you're, how far you have to walk, when the bus drops you off. And I think also in Germany, there is also a big culture of cycling.
Yeah.
So for me, I also got a bike last year and kind of have conformed in that way. You would not have seen me with a bike in Namibia, but now it's kind of, I understand that it just helps you get from point A to point B faster and also to work faster. It takes me 10 minutes to get to work. So there are these elements where Germany kind of allows you to save because public transportation is there and it's readily available. And then I know I don't have to spend so much in a month for a taxi to go to the office or for fuel to go to the office and for things like that.
Yeah. It makes the urban mobility, which is also something that Windhoek is now trying to sort out, also a key factor. Because, we are moving into the modernization era, specifically in Namibia, but
It's getting there, but it's a bit slow. I think it's funny enough, when I was in high school in Namibia, I used to take a bus to school because this was kind of organized by our school, high school at the time.
Yeah.
And when I finished high school, I've never been on a bus since then, because it's just that when I think about it, like where the bus will stop and then where it will pick me up, it just doesn't work. It's too far apart, depending also on where you're living. So I think it's something that maybe also needs to kind of like plan much better.
Getting now into our next question, okay. This one obviously speaks now about, you know, that small community that you just now confessed to us that you're trying to put together. You've got real Namibian plans there, you know, like mastermind plans. Do you know how many of these fellow actors do you know, and also the male to female split, and potentially how long have they been living there?
The good thing with where I work right now, I work for the Africa department at my media house, so I interact with a lot of Africans. It's crazy. It's like I go to work with Ghanaians, Nigerians, someone from Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau, and so on. So I do interact a lot with them, and it's very different from when I was in Namibia. And it's so funny how when I'm also talking to them about their life here in Germany, they came because of an internship, and now they're here for like 10 years on. Most of my colleagues are from all over the African continent, and they've been here for a while. Some have started families, some have families that are still on the continent, and they are living here alone in Germany. So it's definitely different circumstances for them. I've also met Namibians, but I know some of my colleagues always tease me that Namibians are very rare in Germany. Maybe I need to leave the house a bit more. But
or,
I know.
Or they probably might be based in Berlin, right? If we can assume that.
In Berlin, yes. When I was there for a little bit for work, I did meet a few. And I do know about a few Namibians that are working close by in Dusseldorf. But it's just, it takes a while before I will meet another Namibian. And for me, it feels like a unicorn kind of moment where I'm like, oh, gosh, you're Namibian. I'm like crazy, you know? When my colleagues meet another Namibian, they're like, oh gosh, you should also meet my other colleague, she's Namibian. And most of the time when I meet other Africans, they always say, honestly, without fail, I always get this thing where I'm like, oh, you're the first Namibian I've ever met. And they think I'm Kenyan or Nigerian. So clearly I'm a unicorn to them as well.
Yeah. If we get into this might now be slightly, you know, on a negative side, this question about stereotypes. But do stereotypes exist about, doesn't matter what kind of African migrant we are, but do they exist as obvious as some of the media internationally speak about migrant workers and migrants and stuff like that?
I'm not super sure about this, if I'm being honest. Instead of stereotypes, I always kind of think of discrimination that people will face as a foreign worker or as a migrant worker, to be honest. Whether that can kind of be from colleagues or from the way you're treated or the pay gap, you know, how you're paid compared to like another colleague that is German. I think that those are more things that I will kind of hear about. And I know for most people that like foreign migrant workers that are here in Germany, most of the decision to also return home or to leave Germany to go to another country is because of just how hard it is also sort of integrate in the German society. Mm. And then also dealing with bureaucracy in Germany, because it's a headache, because it's slow. Germany still relies on like papers. So you need to have papers for certain things. You need appointments for certain things. And I think there's kind of hurdles for people that want to build a life here, want to bring their family here. Those are kind of things that just feel very annoying. Then sometimes they'll tend to either leave Germany or go back home. So I'm not, with stereotypes, I can't confidently say on that.
Yeah. So it seems probably that the German stereotypes are being reinforced, as you explained it now.
Yeah,
what
I mean...
the Europeans hate about the Germans, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could say certain things. One thing that I did realize in my second year or third year, and this is why I kind of say like I'm sort of building a community, is that in Germany people always say it's kind of hard to like make friends here, because it's kind of when I speak this to even my German friends, it's kind of like it's a hard nut to crack in the beginning, and they're very honest and they don't like superficial relationships at all. And I think back home I'm so used to kind of everyone being so like talkative with each other, or like kind of at least like a friendly basis with each other, where when you're here at a gathering, I think people are not very interested in kind of like the superficial conversations of hi, how are you, and stuff like that. And over time I think people kind of, and me as well in the beginning, and I'm still also, sometimes I need to snap out of it and be like, okay, it's okay, I'm choosing to live here. But then sometimes like the attitude, sometimes where it might appear cold, sometimes gets on me and I'm like, oh, I miss home. You know, oh, I miss like a friendly face or a friendly smile. But you will tend to find it here, but it's just on bad days, then you just feel a bit worse about it.
The next particular part is obviously a question of whether you would encourage any more women. This obviously speaks to a specific part in the report. It's in the executive summary, mm-hmm. where they cite that even though many women form part of the Africans that are migrating for economic purposes, a small share of them actually technically are successful and make it. So you can slightly pat yourself on the shoulder. Okay.
Thank you.
The question that comes from that is, would you encourage, like, let's say, fellow female friends back here in Namibia, mm-hmm. to pursue a career or a lifestyle, or, you know, a life that is obviously supported by a career outside of Namibia?
Oh, Dwight, I'm always trying to slip that in conversations when I'm speaking to friends or family, you know, where I'm just like, you know what, you should come to Germany. But for me, it's a selfish reason where I'm just like, I would love to have more of my family here, of course, yeah. And kind of just keeping me company, and also just for them to also live here and also sort of experience life abroad. It doesn't have to be per se in Germany, even if I can get them to come to Netherlands or Belgium. Sure, go ahead. But I think to answer it as well, yes, I would encourage anyone that's interested to come to Germany, but of course do your research in what career field that you're in, and how to apply, just so that way you're also not getting scammed. Because when I applied for the traineeship at the media organization where I'm working at, I think my parents even didn't know about it or didn't know much about it, and they kind of thought that, oh, what's going to happen? Are you going to come back to Namibia after the traineeship and continue working? Because there is still that kind of distrust sometimes of working abroad, and also just, I think it also comes with the safety factor of wanting to make sure that you're not getting scammed. So for me, yes, I would encourage it, but just do your research, honestly. And also definitely watch videos about the country. Before I came here, I remember watching tons of videos about the German culture. Obviously, they're like a small percentage of showing how life is like, but I think it just helps you to kind of see how the interactions are, you know, whether it's watching the news from the country that you want to go to, or listening to the music, or watching movies from them. So you're kind of used to listening to the language, and have a little bit of an open mind. But also, if you just realize after a year or two that it's not a fit for you, there is no shame in going back home or trying a different country, honestly. But I think it's trying it in the first place that I would encourage anyone.
Yep.
It's a big leap, but it works out.
I mean, currently, which also makes things a bit difficult from Namibia's perspective, is obviously we brought in those new visa restrictions.
Mm.
So it's obviously also how Germany probably responded to Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
When Namibia brought in the reciprocity under Minister Kawana. He made a good point, but yeah, the point was it had some consequences as well.
I will say, objectively, I love the decision that was made by the Ministry of Home Affairs.
Mm.
And of course, I don't think that has ever stopped tourism in Namibia. I don't know the numbers per se, and I'm pretty sure you would know this way better, Dwight. But I think people are still traveling to Namibia. They're still very interested in tourism, and it didn't deter them. So it's also good for our own government, the fact that we are monetizing it as well in a way.
Or slightly monetizing more. Because
Last
year they ended at, what was it, August? They almost reached like 500 million. I'm speaking under correction.
Imagine this.
It was more than that. Because it was 100 million within 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
So if you multiplied that, it could have been 500 million by August. Really.
And if we started this like 10 years ago, we would have been up there as well. It could have helped. I don't know what the money is currently doing right now that they get from the visa. But
we would have had more, a lot more.
I think just one thing that I wanted to also add, Dwight, is also the fact that when you're also researching what you want to do in Germany, just also keep in mind that Germany does make itself quite attractive to migrant workers as well, and they do have certain things that kind of allow for them to come in, whether it's the Skilled Labor Immigration Act or the Opportunity Card as well in Germany. So there are ways that Germany also tries to appeal to people all over the continent for them to kind of come. And I did also see last year in Kenya, there was also an initiative between the German government and also Kenya to also have healthcare workers as well come to Germany and also in Namibia. We also had that with the Ministry of Health, where they had a few healthcare workers that also came to Germany, and they are still here. So I think another important thing is always check in whatever field you have, because they will be an opportunity some way.
I've got a niece there currently who just finished grade 12, and she was like, "Shut up, guys, won't see you again." But she's closer to Frankfurt, I believe. Yeah.
What is she doing?
It's more like the au pair opportunities, you know, for young ladies immediately after high school. So yeah, that was the one opportunity she took.
Yeah, and my niece as well, because she also took another opportunity where she takes care of people with physical and mental disabilities. Mm-hmm. So those are definitely opportunities that Germany tries to kind of appeal to migrant workers as well, for them to try to come here to work for that.
Yeah. Getting into our last question, Kitty, this one is obviously just about, you know, like the labor conditions, but you did touch on it already. Back in the, you know, looking at the differences between Namibia and Germany, for example. But if I ask this question in terms of labor dimensions, this is obviously based upon the equal pay, you know, how work is in the same industry that you worked in Namibia and they're currently in Germany. How are these particular dimensions? Is it better outside Namibia, or is it like depending on the situation?
I would say a bit of both, depending on the situation and also on the field that you're in. If I look at journalism, a big drive for coming to Germany was the fact that looking at the salary as a journalist, if you're an intern, you were getting paid, I think, I mean, that was back in the day when I was working, so that was 8, 9 years ago, I'm not super sure, but it was, I think, 2,500 Namibian dollars at the time, and then when you shifted from an intern to a junior journalist, then it was a bit more, but then judging from my prospects, I was thinking that it would only take me being a senior to actually see good money, you know, in my bank account.
Yeah.
And so it did help the fact that I was living at home, so I didn't have to worry about extra expenses. But for me, I just kept thinking that, oh gosh, it's going to take me a while, and I have to be at a point of a senior editor for me to see that good money. Mm. And now when I'm in Germany, obviously when I was a traineeship, I started from like kind of a smaller salary, and then I had yearly contracts to kind of integrate me from like a trainee to now being a journalist, so being a broadcast journalist at the company. And it does take a while from kind of the salary that I had from a trainee to the salary that I have now. Obviously, there's still work, there's still improvement that you need to do to yourself and within the work that you're doing. But compared to Namibia, I would say that the pay is good. Mm. And it's just
no,
a thing
no,
of
don't
me
worry.
Having...
I know. The pay is super good. I've seen some of the scales, and that's just province to province, right? Or is it... Does Germany have provinces, or is it regions?
It's regions.
Yeah.
Is it provinces? I'm not super sure. But again, it depends, because also when I talk, it also depends on the field again. Like when I talk to other friends that are in the healthcare industry, and then they tell me how much they're getting paid, I'm like, oh, maybe I should have pivoted to another career. You know, journalism was not it. You know, exactly like that. So it depends, you know, on the field that you're doing. Obviously, if it's healthcare, if it's a certain skill, you know, IT or anything like that, then you'd be getting paid more. And then, I mean, if I had to compare, I'm pretty sure the journalism in the scale of like in Germany would still be getting paid a bit low compared to other things. But I think if I compare to Namibia, I'm like, okay, I see something, and I see myself growing financially and also being able to kind of, just grow in general.
Yeah. And on that particular note, okay, it does bring us up to the end of our discussion. I'd like to...
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heavy nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. So we continue. You are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we just listened to an audio which that was conducted by yours truly, Dwight. Hence, Dwight and Helmut on Eagle FM. And speaking on the other side of the, you know, on the other end of the line was Okeri Ngushinado. Again, pardon if I'm butchering that. But now, she did make several points that extending further, in the home run discussion, and that is, you know, the challenges and the challenges and the opportunities that comes with being in a different country, and It does bring up a lot of things, including, you know, okay, there are a lot of barriers that you have to navigate. And like she pointed out, for her, at least, you know, she had a good start when it comes to language. And it's not just the, I think this is one of those challenges, and those challenges are not going to be faced by you going to work in a different, or more like looking for opportunities outside the African continent, because Africa itself has like 3 main languages. I don't know if I can count Spanish, because there's only one country that uses Spanish. Spanish is an official language, but for a lot of countries on the African continent, use I think you know, let's go with 4. It's either it's either Arabic, French, or English for the most part, with a few Portuguese, Mozambican and Angola, for example, and. Madagascar is French. Yeah, Madagascar is French. Now, there is motion. People are moving. Like I pointed out earlier, people are moving in search of opportunities. And some of them are, you know, some are finding these opportunities. And but the most important thing to put in mind is that it doesn't really end well for us. It doesn't really end well for some. And this is not me scaring you. I'm about to make a reference to the was that a year or two ago when it was all over the local media here that there are Namibians that were stuck in Oman. Now, all these are, these are not people that left their country just because, you know, Namibia was too comfortable. There are challenges. And if you look at the statistics of unemployment and this is actually a continental challenge, because you have the African continent with the second most populous continent, second from Asia, with a very large number and the number of youth, which continues to balloon. So that means you have a lot of fresh energy on the continent that is looking for opportunities to, you know, to make a name for themselves, to make income for themselves. But these opportunities rarely come by. So they're living in droves. So we'll continue on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just with more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, aye. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Yeah, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today is a migration discussion, labor migration. You just put in, it's labor migration, not criminal migration. If you go to a whole different country to rob a bank, that's not labor migration. That's criminal migration. It's a whole different thing. Now, what was I? So there are challenges associated with being an immigrant labor. Sometimes you are being, there are chances of being scammed, which is why you really have to be very careful with regards to doing due diligence of in whatever country that you would like to, you know, to go in search of opportunities in. And I think something that is a no-brainer is must be the language barrier. Not all countries use English as an official language, and I know that includes countries that includes white people countries. Not all white people speaks English. No. So that means first of all. I think this means to be as a young person, you have to be tech savvy, not an expert. Just know your way around, like how to use the internet, for example, and how to know the difference between a legitimate and a scammer on the online, especially because not all the websites or emails, especially those ones that are just popping up randomly telling you that there's a job for you in Singapore, when you know you didn't complete even a single application form, and red flag. So wherever you are planning on finding yourself, do your due diligence. Dig information up. Know the basics about the culture, the language, the people. Because at the end of the day, if you are going to in search of opportunity in a country where you where you are not familiar with, first of all, chances of of offending people and coming off as offensive are really high, and you don't want to start offending people the moment you land into the country. I mean, that's talk about a terrible first impression. Yeah, so language is one of those challenges that is basically faced by a lot of migrant labor individuals. This is not a challenge that is just unique to Namibia, South Africa, or Germany, or Japan, or China, or any country, but this is a challenge of all countries, because all countries have migrants coming in search of opportunity, or they have jobs working in, they find jobs in their countries, and they have their own citizens that are leaving their country to go in search of opportunities in other countries. So you have, it's a two-way traffic, basically. Now, this two-way traffic means you cannot leave everything to chance. So you must have nations leaders now, or on a global level, they must come together and sort of like figure out how to navigate the challenges that are faced by a lot of different foreigners that are in all kinds of different countries. So, which is why you have, every country must have either an international ministry here in Namibia, or you have, India uses, a foreign affair. So it's either foreign relations, foreign affairs, or international relations. Bottom line is there is some kind of foreign involvement. You are dealing with someone who is not from your country, and that person is going to participate in the economy in terms of looking for opportunities, aka looking for jobs, and they are going and they will they are going to make friends. Yeah, with the citizens of your country, they are going to get in a fight. Just don't do that. They are going to need legal assistance. Take for example, if they go out for work and their house is broken into, how is that situation handled? So every country then is required, needless to say, to put all these legal safety nets in place when it comes to handling things, whether positive or negative things associated with individuals that are not of that particular country. Now, that is a lot of work for a government, but it's something that you can't just throw it, not do anything because, it's a lot of work. Because people are moving. People are moving. And people are gonna move. And what you have here is, and the more people are gonna move, the more people are, the more good things are gonna happen, and every now and then, bad things will happen. Not wishing for it, but part of this good things are gonna happen. That's gonna happen is people will want to work, and people will fall in love. Then they'll start a family with someone who is in your country. How do you navigate all the all these challenges on a governance level? You still want to be in public office? Because, I never actually understood, the scope of responsibilities that comes with a public office, especially the higher up you go, until I started doing this job. And now, every time that I, I look at a ministry or an SOE or a directorate, even a department, the first thing I want to look at is what is the mandate of this department or this ministry or this SOE or this directorate? And when you look at their mandate and you look at the responsibilities that they're entrusted with, you can't help but go, okay, that is a lot. Take your Act of Parliament, for example. your Act of Parliament is more of a manual for the particular SOE that this, that this Act of Parliament basically brought forth and regulates in terms of their operation parameters. Now, what that brings you to is it reminds you every now and then that public office is no joke. Is no joke. So now let's get to two of the reports that we're going to be using as our source of reference pretty much for the entire show. The first one is going to be the African Union. Yeah, we're going to use two. There's the African Union one, and there's the International Labour Organization one. The International Labour Organization one came out in February, and the African Union one, this is a fairly recent, came out, the International Labour Organization came out in February. And the African Union one came out when this came out. Okay, now that's from 2022. One I have on my phone is a widely, terrible one. This one came out. Un momento. Ah. Yeah, actually, it's not recent. It's as old as time. I just, mixed up the dates. Now, the African Labour Organization one is for 2026. The African Union one is from 2022. Interesting. Now, here's one thing that is somewhat interesting to point out. One thing that was pointed out in Dwight and Ngushinado interview was, first of all, being homesick. And I've had the luxury of meeting some, people that work, that worked or work, outside, actually, Namibians, and I can only imagine how homesick it is. Because look, for those of you, for you and I that are in Windhoek, every time that we feel like seeing our loved ones, we can just Silas Napuka, Oasis, Intercape, just take a peek, and you're at home. You can fly if you have the money. I mean, sure. But if you are abroad, for example, then you're just looking at. Jeez, okay. And there are economic advantages and disadvantages that comes with it. The cost of living in a lot of developed countries is obviously high. So that's a fancy way of saying things are going to be expensive. That expensive. Now, this is how I picture it. If I was at Tikanduko right now, which is, my village, I wouldn't have to pay rent. But then, just if you look at the distance from, how would I get to work? Because the distance from Tikanduko to Windhoek is a holy cow, a very long one. So now, of course, there are challenges that comes with these things. So let's start from economic discussion. Economic context, for Africa. Labor migration is deeply intertwined with Africa's economic landscape, characterized by stark disparities in economic, in income due to varying development levels. So one of the reasons why there is a large number of, at least from an African standpoint, why a lot of, Africans find themselves abroad. And we heard from Ngushinado that she's in Germany and she's she finds herself in just the media house that she works with. Working with Kenyans, Ghanaians, Nigerians, and basically a lot of African, Africans that are from a lot of different African countries. So that means people are moving in search of opportunities, and people are always going to move in search of opportunities. So so that means it's up to governments of all countries basically to come together, and as they did, if you if you ask me, through the International Labour Organization, to look at how to how to create the right conditions for the for the immigrants that are coming in their countries. It's like you do me, I do you type of things. You treat my citizens correctly, you treat my city, you create the right environment for my citizens, and I will create the right environment for your citizens. Because whether you like it or not, as heads of state, citizens are going to move in between different countries. And citizens, believe it or not, are going to get married between different countries. So you have to come up now with the right, legislations, for example, that regulates how ownership, for example. One of my favorite case, comes out of South Africa, where a South African citizen, married an Indian woman. They were living in India. Now there were some kind of legal challenges that ended up, in relation to their properties in India. Now they had to determine, how ownership of property is going to be handled. Take for example, you have a lot of challenges. Now, one thing that Dwight and, and which another interview pointed out was, I may decide, for example, maybe I'm just scrolling through online and find, an interesting vacancy, for example, that I'm qualified to take for example, in Germany. And then I find out that, Germany is not working well for me, but then there's another opportunity that, that I find, take, for example, in the UK. But at this point, I already have a German girlfriend. Now we have a problem here. So, and then she decides, okay, you know what? Actually, I also found now if she also finds an opportunity in the UK, we both move to UK. And now we are in the UK, she's Germany, I'm Namibian, we want to get married. Now you see the problem. She's German, I'm Namibian, we are in the UK. None of us is in their country of birth, but we want to get married. That's David Lavin. These are challenges, but David, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. People say I should not say thank you for having me because I'm always here. I think the migration aspect, as you well articulated it, especially to look at the pushing factors,
yeah,
that at the center of it is economic pushing factors,
yeah,
and it's also a pulling factor on the other side. But the other thing also, you also have voluntary migration. You have various types of migration. I think we are not going to go into those definitions.
Yeah.
But at the center of everything is, did you make your house a desirable house for your kids to stay? And we should also ask ourselves, when we speak about migration, who are the people who have capacity to migrate? You will be interested to go deep into the statistics and also look at the average migrant. Then you realize that these are young, energetic, maybe educated, but looking for opportunities. And the same thing that you also mentioned, social life will always kick in. In the process of looking for opportunity, you always meet your girlfriend, or yeah, they always meet their husband on their way. And they, in the process of making kids, that's why it becomes so complicated.
Yeah.
I was fascinated by the story of Yamal, the guy who was central in the winning of Spanish, World Cup.
Yeah,
to see how he came about. Those are product of migrations,
yeah,
and they become world champion. But what is also indicating in this context is that is addressing the central. You will never win in saying that the people must stay at home,
mm-hmm,
unless you make it desirable.
Yeah.
But other factors, you have mentioned aspect of complication in terms of either it's property ownership, either it's in terms of where do you have a bigger voice. You all find yourself, you're all migrants, you're all in the UK,
mm-hmm,
you're all living in a tent somewhere, but at least compared to where you were coming from, I think the quality you are celebrating, because you upgraded. Yeah, you are celebrating that life. Yeah, but what I want to bring about is that let us look at not only economic factors, but economy is forming a huge part of it. I don't need to be taught. I don't need UN to make a study for me so that I know migration. I see it every day.
Yeah.
I see it in the robots when I come to work every day. Even internal continental migration, I see that. Then you realize that you have a bigger problem. And the bigger problem that we have is, apart from fixing institutions, is connecting a human being to the economy. Yeah. That's why. It's connecting a human being to the economy. That's why what I'm always trying to indicate is that it doesn't matter how your infrastructures are upgraded. If your infrastructure are not connected to the human beings that are within your country, you always lose people. How come they are praising Africa at the UN that we have the youngest population? But do you know that how many people we are losing every day leaving Africa? Just on an average, how many people we are losing every day? How many people are in the desert of Oman? How many are dying in the Mediterranean Sea? And it's few who are returning. And that is an argument to say when you are presenting this report, and I like the fact that you are bringing it about, at the end of any discussion, the question that should always be asked is that, what lesson can Namibia learn from here? How can we contextualize the report at the continental level?
Yeah.
What can we learn and what can we do very fast?
Let's bring it home.
Yeah, let us bring it at home. And you also start to see that sometimes the report may not mention your country specifically, but the signs are always there. How many Namibians are outside the country? How many young people outside the country? There was an incident of a young woman in Namibia, from Namibia, who was seen on social media, not in a very good condition. But it's a good thing that Namibia responded. Maybe you should also ask that that one, yes, maybe she went through education, but apart from that, there are always things that are attracting young people to go and get that opportunity from there. But if young people start mating on the other side, which is something that you cannot stop, you are losing your offsprings.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people in the diaspora. And some of them don't want even to come back at home.
That's one aspect that was that's more often referenced as the biggest challenge that migrant workers seems to face.
Mm.
It's like you and I, we're just looking for opportunities online, and then we realize that there's something that our academic qualifications meet the criteria of in Japan, and we apply and we are taken and we go there, and then maybe you spend 2-3 years of navigating the language challenge, and then you catch up. At this point you find yourself in a situation where you are making friends, and you make friends, and then you meet the love of your life, and now you're having kids.
Yeah.
Now you have Africans and their grandchildren.
Yeah.
Now you're in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With with your kids.
Miyamoto Angola.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
You're not helping. The thing is, they can barely speak English. They can barely speak English, let alone Oshwambo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not only are you dealing with the distance, family here is facing a serious issue, because not only are you dealing with the distance, but also you are dealing with several barriers of language that you have to navigate with regards to bringing your family together, with the family that you have made there and the family that you have left here.
Yeah.
I think that's one interesting challenge to navigate. One thing you'll find interesting is the further away you are from home, the more interested you are, and more like happy you are to meet people that you are from home. David, if you and I have, even if you and I, have never met in Namibia, if we met in Germany or we meet in Spain, the moment I find out you are Namibian, we are friends.
No, brother. No, but you're Biadi.
Yeah, but here we're just walking past each other.
No, I think, it's a pain that, migrants will not express, and the feelings that are not even expressed. To say when you are in a foreign country, especially when you went there looking for opportunities, there are things that people are going through, but you don't even express it to anybody. That's why when you see one guy from Africa, don't even say from Namibia, then you look at that person, you are so happy just to meet that person. Then it will really tell you to say the brother is far from home. He's trying to make it, but it's also either a psychological impact of that.
It's just homesick,
something.
Right?
Yeah. Sometimes it's homesick.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's something which is going to impact even the setup of the family of that individual.
Yeah.
Look at most of the families of migrants. Not people who went on business travel.
Mm-hmm.
People who went look for opportunities.
Yeah.
Some ladies, they may enter into strategically economic relationship just to survive. But that is not people that they love.
Yeah.
Then after that, it will break that cycle and move again to a next person the moment they settle. It's the same with men. You know, the reports are there. You know, it's very easy for a man from Namibia to enter into UK. That's why if you have to look at last year, the communication from the Secretary of Homeland, is it Homeland? It's equivalent to Home Affair in the UK. He said, no, Namibia, put your house in order. There's a lot of people here who are coming to UK, but they are saying you guys are discriminating them because they are not subscribing to the two specific gender.
You understand? Oh, seriously? What I mean? People do that?
Yeah, they do that.
Look, I think it's...
That's our generation is going through. Not just because of survival. Some of them, they are spokesperson, but people, they make funny things.
Isn't it just a get out of jail free card?
I'm telling you. I think at the end of any discussion about the report should not only be statistics. And that is where the problem is. Because one thing I have seen, and it has been spoken about, to say, when we are so excited about numbers,
mm-hmm.
our academics, our researchers, our journalists and our presenters, they are more very happy to look at the numbers and statistics.
Boy,
breaking news is numbers and statistics.
We
do this. But we don't really go and ask to say, I am an economic journalist and I do report on economic affairs, for example.
Yeah.
Then I can't be happy every time the financial sector is performing the way it's performing. I must ask that question to say, I'm also part of that. I'm not just reporting. I'm also part of that thing to say, what can we do? What can we do to make sure that we are better? What can we do to make sure that with our small population, with a booming industry that we are looking into, who's going to work there?
Yeah.
When people picked their Mondako, how do you call it in your language? This bank that you can find it anywhere. In a very difficult situation, you find it wherever you are
really
traveling. Let's see, because I like reading reports.
You know, now that I brought up the whole homesick thing.
Yeah,
ish. Must be depressing sometimes, though.
Imagine you are here, you miss home, but you are within your country. What about another person who?
Yeah, I can only
imagine. He's called names. He does not have proper documents. Maybe you don't have communication with your friends. Maybe you are partially slave there.
Look, the courage it takes, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the courage it takes.
Yeah.
I had to be dragged to Windhoek.
Mm.
Yeah. That's how terrified I was to come to it. My cousin dragged me to it. And then now I'm, I know Windhoek inside out. I was terrified it's one of those things where you're like, okay, there's nothing for me to do here. But maybe there is something there. I have to go there. But then you have a lot of, you have a lot of unknowns. Mm. And naturally, we're just scared of the unknown, which is why I think, I don't think we give migrant workers, aka the people that basically leave the country to go and look for opportunities in other countries. I don't think we give them, enough credit because, I was watching a video of one Zimbabwean guy in South Africa. Where he was, talking to, on a podcast that, you guys that have never left your country will never find out just how terrifying it is to leave your country, to go to a country where you know very well. You don't know a single person in that country. And you are just actually betting on the research that you have made on culture, job opportunities, and whatever vacancy that you applied for that is taking you to that country. Or you are just going there to, to start from the ground up. It is terrifying.
No, it is terrifying.
And I didn't think of it like that until he pointed that out. That's when I realized, that's when I actually reminded myself of how terrified I was to leave Kavango just here.
Migration, especially you migrate without an option. You mentioned an important point. I think it was 2 weeks ago when we were discussing almost the same topic. But you spoke something to say there are a lot of pros and cons in somebody deciding to go through Mediterranean Sea. There are a lot of thinking that the person have put into that, the person to realize, to say, it's a do or die. Because he tried all the things, and he's hearing that there is something there. However, there's no possibility for you to die on the way. Or there's a possibility for you to be worse.
It's risky.
Yeah, it's a risky business. But it's the same question that we asked, to say, what is that we have done to the sons and daughters of the soil, that they are left with no options, but they make sure that they go and take those risks. The reports, the thing about a study or a report can give you a perspective.
We'll continue on the other side of the
road.
You know, there's something about opening a Chafo Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Chafo Lager and start the conversation. Chafo Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Welcome back. So we continue after that short break. You are still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one, and David and Dwight on your number one talk radio station. So where were you?
No, I was indicating to say there's a lot of thought process that were put there for somebody to decide to leave the country. There's a lot of analysis that a person has done. And one of the things that we don't realize is that every human being is a risk analyst. Do you understand that? Every human being is a personal risk analyst. Before you get any decision, you do risk analysis. And whether you are good at it or you are bad at it, there is a certain level that you do risk analysis before you move. Now, the question is that why the young, educated,
mm-hmm.
are leaving the continent? Then what magic strategy or what magic move is it going to be done to make sure that you reduce? Because you're not going to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You are not going to stop it now. It was never stopped. Migration has always increased.
Yeah.
You look at British Parliament. I was shocked to see, what is the name of the lady? She's I think it's the Labour Party. Cannot remember correctly. The way she speaks, but you really know, you look at her, then this is our daughter, this one. but you realize to say it's a product of migration to say, yeah. No, capacity, you are transferring capacity. Because what people don't see is that when you lose a human being, the same thing, you are losing things in raw materials.
Yeah.
you lost already your diamond as a raw form, you lost your uranium as a raw form,
mm-hmm.
then you are also losing the young and energetic individuals.
Basically losing your workforce.
No, you are losing everything. Even if they go and work there,
yeah.
they are not going to they are building foreign economies. I was listening today at South Africa, they have a government business partnership. It's like an equivalent to Namibia private public private sector forum,
mm-hmm.
where they were giving a very good presentation. But one of the things that they have stated, and which I think is practical, is dealing with the energy sector. One of the things that they indicated is that infrastructure of energy sector.
Yeah.
is the only way that you're going to build the industry and also create, opportunities for the young people within that continent. Whether it's political correctness, whether it's presenting it, that is the only way to go. Otherwise, it will not work out and people will continue to move out. Where investors are coming here, people are going through the borders with their Maudacos and other banks. To make sure that they find better opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, I think it's also a sense of not really to say pride, a sense of purpose. I will not believe anybody who say Namibian young people are ungovernable, they don't know what they are doing. I will not agree with that person. Or they are just in dancing around, they are just partying and the future ended in us. There is always that saying, when an elder look at you, say, no, mm-hmm. you know, the real life ended with us. And that is not true. Apart from those, you really want to tell me that all millions of the young population that you have in Namibia, they are coming from the same house. There's something that we are not doing well. And we must accept that.
Yeah.
And the faster we accept it, then the better. And the same thing, then you can expand it to a continental level, because there must be something that should be done immediately, especially to retain skills and also give hope to those who are energetic. Because if it's not done, then I think we have a very, very long way to go.
Mm.
Yeah, a very long way to go, because you will never ever be in this point in time in the 21st century where you have an advantage of the population. Because in 20 years' time, things are going to change. You are not going to be here. Even Africa is not going to be here in 20 years in terms of population advantage.
Mm.
And also because people are going to become old, and you must also understand that economic difficulties of the country will also have an impact on the birth rate, especially when lifestyle becomes so expensive.
Mm.
That is what is going to be. But the moment we admit that we have a problem that we contributed to, that we need to deal with, then we can solve these issues. That's why I'm always looking, when I'm in a situation, the first person to look at it is myself. Okay, David, how did you get yourself into this? How did you move? How did you get yourself into this? Because I realized that in many debates, I've been very defensive, but I realize to say sometimes your moves, if you are not acknowledging that,
you're not entirely free, free of fault.
Yeah, yeah.
You have some degree of fault that you contributed to this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the, one of the most interesting challenge, apart from the pushing factors that both the, the African Union and the International Labour Organization looks at, especially in relations to to migrant workers, is social safety nets. Because at the end of the day, we are young and vibrant, and then we leave the continent. But with time, we are going to find ourselves in retirement age. Yeah. Now there then comes a challenge. You can't work anymore because you just don't have the strength that you had 20, 30 years ago.
They are long-term fingers.
Okay. Yeah. So it turns out when it comes to creating the safety nets, I have worked, and this is actually one of those interesting part when you start comparing. The long-term thinking as an immigrant worker, for example, if you and I find ourselves, find ourselves in Japan, the first thing that will always be at the back of our heads is that, we are not from here. Yeah. We are from Namibia.
Yeah.
So, we don't have any pension type of saving like we have GIPF at home if you're in the public sector.
Yeah.
So that means, your future saving and your future safety net for the time that you are going to reach a time of, where you don't have the energy to work, where you basically have to be in retirement. All those thoughts, you have to know that all that burden is on me. I have to live every day in a foreign land, knowing that 20, 30 years from now, no one is going to have a financial safety net for me. I have to figure everything out now. I have to come up with some type of, at that time frame, insurance. Financial insurance safety net. I have to come up with that. This is one of those things that makes me also look at migrant workers and go like, you guys are tough, because now you have to factor all that in. Like, how do I take care of me now and me in the future and the people at home?
And there's always this selling point of indicating that when you go to a foreign land, you become rich. You get the coins and all these things. And one thing that you need to understand is that in every society, there are always stratas within the society.
Yeah.
And when you have stratas within the society, you understand that it's few of them who break through those settings and becoming wealth. And also build connections. Yes, if you have skills, if you are a professional, you are not a migrant. You are needed. You are a rare skill. If you are a professional, let me say, I can compare somebody who went to UK to study and start working in Manchester City, in London, in Swansea or wherever he find himself. That is not a migrant. That is you are needed on an expert basis.
International Labour Organization guys are like, whether you have a skills or not, migrant labour.
That is quite different, and I think it also worth noting that in unpacking such a report, categorization matters.
Yeah.
To say if there was one lady who was working for a green hydrogen program, I don't know where she is now. She was highly trained and working in these international companies in engineering and all these things. Then one thing I have seen is that. You go out and gain more skills. That is a good thing.
Yeah.
As long as you are coming back home, as long as you know where you are coming from, that is a good thing. If you are in the oil and gas industry in Venezuela, we are very happy for you. As long as you come back with skills.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in Iran or wherever, as long as you come back with skills. But if you go to, say, the countries that raised my father, my mother, and my great parents, I'm not able to breathe in it anymore. And I'm left with no option but to jump the fence. That can really tell you to say, there must be something that we are all not doing right. And when I'm saying we are all not doing right, I think it's a better way of not pointing fingers to say, how do we meet on the table? And what can we do so that we can move forward? And maybe the other thing is also,
social cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
Social cohesion matters. You know, when I look, for example, at oil and gas conference, I look at the players.
Mm-hmm.
I look at and I ask myself a question to say, in terms of Namibians, how many Namibians do we have here that can fly to other countries just to attend the conference so that they can strategically invest in that? Where are the Namibian professionals? Where are the Namibian young people in that sector? Why am I saying this? I'm saying this because looking into the future, why people can't wait to go to South Africa to via Orange River,
mm-hmm.
or through, you know, I don't know what they use, but maybe through just a short-term visit and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Other people cannot wait to get citizenship of Africa. The same with DRC. People are running away and people say, no, don't run away. Why are you running? But you have those who cannot wait to get the citizenship of DRC so that they can invest in that area. And it's a quite contradictory because people are fighting, they are fighting in airports there to get the next flight to come to Africa.
Yeah.
But we are dying in the Mediterranean Sea,
yeah.
to get at least at the onshore.
Much of that is, much of that is startup capital. Because if you are a businessman somewhere in any of the developed countries and you are looking for investment opportunities, because you already have the capital or you are being backed up by, by some financial, some financial powerhouse, be it a multinational conglomerates or one of those rich families.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be looking forward to come here.
Yeah.
One example that Dwight likes to tell about this is just a Namibian who is let's just say from a well-off family that decided to go to Kavango West to start his own farming, agriculture, crop farming.
Mm.
Now the thing is, the portion of land he was given was was exhausted and nutrition wise.
Yeah,
It was exhausted, so he had to rehabilitate this piece of land. I think he spent about 2-3 years rehabilitating that portion of land before he, before he just started, cultivating the land, and he got a very good harvest, a good harvest of broccoli.
Mm.
Yeah, and the thing is. And I mean, you and I don't have, you and I can afford to do that.
I hear you, I hear you.
You and I cannot afford to spend 3 years of not working, rehabilitating a portion of land.
No, definitely.
To cultivate in 2-3 years.
Definitely.
You're going to starve to death. And that's because of where you're coming from. For a lot of for a lot of developed countries, a lot of people that want to come here, especially for investment purposes, they you can imagine they already sorted out the financial part.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now you and I are planning on going to their country.
Yeah.
So that we can sort out the financial part. So in other words, they are 10 steps ahead of us.
No, they are very far. No, they are very, very far. It's a good analysis that you gave, especially looking at where we are standing. But the main question that we should also ask is that when you look at the International River Migration Report, when you look into it and you look at the geography, because human reactions they are connected to a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You can take that report, then you can get the whole picture of the governance of that region. You can get the whole picture of the economy of that region. You can get the whole picture of the security risk of that region to say how many people are coming from here, what are their age, how many people are coming from here, what is the situation like, what level of that country in terms of economic ranking.
Mm-hmm.
Is a lower middle income country or is... upper middle income countries, what is their source of income? In the past 2 years, if they have increment migration, out of continent migration, for example, what happened in the past 2 years? Was it is the country in debt? Did we have conflict? Is the situation not conducive, or the resources are going down? Because the whole thing of a human reaction
And don't say it's the first time people are moving. People have been always moving.
Yeah, people,
have always been moving.
That's one
for,
thing.
For various reasons.
That's actually the departure point of the African Union labor migration report.
Yeah.
They're just pointing out the obvious here that, okay, you know what? People have been moving.
But people have been moving for various various reasons.
Yeah.
People have been running away from war. In every war, you always have people, you know, refugee camps and all these things. But if you have consistent movement of people out of the countries, especially the capable,
that's not
who's going to take care of the elders.
Yeah,
and you already have a generational conflict which we do not want to admit. We have already have a generational gap within the structure of the continent of Africa. But now, in that generational gap, if you remove again the youth, it's going to be very difficult. You may not see it now because it is not taking a shape now.
Mm-hmm.
But let me give you 10 years. If it continues to be like this, even the village where we come from, you go to the village and you start seeing how many young people are in this village, how many have moved to the city, and also who is taking care of the elders. You realize that, you know, some people, they leave. It's only elders that are left at the village, women and elders. They're energetic. They left. But it's the same thing that you also need to look at to say, what can I do? That is why I think a country such as Namibia was very strategic enough to realize to say, decentralize, colleagues. It's the same thing. It's the same thing if you look at it at the international level, to say decentralize. Universities can't just be in the city. High court and Supreme High Court just can't be in the city. You can't just have home affairs in various cities. You must decentralize. ACC just can't be in the city. I think at the national level, it's also about why are you moving? Do people move to Windhoek because they love Windhoek, really?
No, it's not
like that. It's an opportunity being presented and also the hope that is there.
You see, in 2018, Ibrahim was, you know, said something fascinating to a group of, there were a few African leaders in place, but it was just, there were also a large number of youth.
Is it not Ibrahim Young Professional Program? They have something like that.
He was just asking, he was talking about, the age gap discussion in relations to leadership.
Yeah.
And more like there's a lot of, there's this vacuum that is left, especially for a lot of African countries with regards to getting young people involved in governance. He literally said, are you guys crazy? And what he said was, you can't be running for office in your 90s. Look, I know what, I just can't prove it, but I know which country he was talking about. The thing is, the whole idea of young people are too irresponsible to be trusted with something as complicated as governance, for example. And yes, governance is complicated. It involves a lot of nuance that you basically have to bring together. But the thing is, if that is your reason for not bringing young people on board, then you are a complete idiot, because that's exactly the reason why you should bring young people on board, so you can train them on time. Because let's face it, you are not immortal. Sooner or later, someone is going to go full Cristiano Ronaldo in the bucket, and young people will have to take over anyways. Now, do you want...
Even Messi.
Yeah. The thing is, young people are going to take over anyway. Now, it's up to you now to decide whether you have, whether to train young people so that when you are, so that when you are not there anymore, whether, whether you are happy with Moses or you are at the farm somewhere enjoying your retirement.
Yeah.
Yeah, whichever comes first. I think it's safe to say that it would be very safe for you to have responsible ones that you have trained in office. Because if you don't train anyone, when you're out of the picture, it's the irresponsible, untrained ones that will take over anyways.
Let me give you an example of a generational gap. And this effect when you have created that distance between the first generation and the second generation, just the first and second generation, when you create that distance, that vacuum, not only in terms of power,
mm-hmm.
also in terms of economic opportunities. Yeah. Let me give you an example. Namibia was recruiting for a prosecutor general position. She has been there for a long. Everybody knows she has been there for a long. She's capable. Nobody can say she's not capable.
Yeah.
I'm not a legal person to interpret all the in and out of the things.
Yeah.
But there was a question which was asked to say, the question of succession was not there. That's there was no question of succession.
Yeah.
That's why. How come you have the best Namibians who come forward, the best Namibian legal representatives?
Yeah.
Who come forward,
yeah.
but they are not able to make it to 50 to 51% or 50% to pass that test. What does it tell you? Whether the setup of the interview is correct or is not correct, what it's telling you is that we are not talking the same picture, which means that even when we are in a boardroom, the head is very far ahead because the head was supposed to train and also have a succession plan. You are not going to live there forever. It's not only with PG, it's with any other person.
Yeah.
Because once you are gone, it's going to be very difficult. Once you are not feeling very well, let's say nature did not take its course.
Yeah.
Let's say you are not feeling very well.
Yeah.
Who's going to take care of that position? Because, and it's something that I think it should also teach us. When today I was watching it, is it the fifth, CDC, regional conference in Namibia? I look at our good doctor, Esperanza Rubindao, the Minister of Health, at the highest level of her career, but her level of engagement is equivalent to the Director General of World Health Organization. Director General, they might be different terms of experience.
Yeah.
Director General of CDC Africa and all other elder ministers at that level. What does this tell you? This tells you that if young people are given opportunity to make mistakes, are trusted, they may even end up bypassing their masters because they have other advantages that the previous generation did not have. The first generation did not have advantage of technology, advantage of self-education. But when I look at her at that level, I realize to say, I think we have been underestimating a lot of young people, especially to not only engage in politics, but to engage in opportunities to lead institutions. Because whether you are experienced or not, once you reach a certain age, you start sleeping. You may have been an expert and you start sleeping because there's a lot of things that are going on now. And this one with the IT expert, this one, they are the one that you need for you to succeed.
Yeah.
That's why intelligent leaders, they always make sure that they are up to date with what is happening within their generation, within the generation after them, and also what's happening on the ground. That's the only way that you're going to connect. Otherwise, you'll be speaking in the same room in completely different zone. It is not going to work.
Like they're speaking completely different languages.
Yeah, completely different languages, yeah. Yeah.
All right, we have 5 minutes to the hour of six. Before we continue, let's take a live read. Welvichia University 2027 applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences programs, Certificate of Enrolled Nurse, Midwife/Accoucheur Level 6, Certificate of Pharmacy Level 5, Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, Bachelor of Social Works Honours, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health and Master of Occupational Health and Safety. Apply now. For more information, please call 081-403-6406, 081-403-6406. Welvichia University, where everyone is an achiever. You know, I totally agree with you on the transition discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see, we are Africans. I think this should be natural with us because during the time of kings and queens, more like monarchy type of ruling.
Yeah.
Something that I liked the monarchy about was that the line of succession was well thought out.
Yeah,
if you look at the UK, for example,
mm-hmm.
every male, the closest guys to the closest guys, like, you know, like Prince Harry and Prince William?
Yeah.
They're already on certain, they're already in line of succession to the throne.
Yeah,
and this is something that I think we should have to figure out and how to incorporate it into democracy.
Yeah.
But for having a protege type of trainee when someone is in a significant position, whether it's public, private, but just looking at it in a public sector sphere of things.
Mm-hmm.
I have had the privilege of working with elders.
Yeah.
And one thing that I discovered was that there are elders out there in the public sector in certain positions that are just looking for someone to impart all those years of knowledge on. I met one lady, the national broadcaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then one friend of mine works for the works for the Lotus Sport.
Yeah.
His supervisor is one such gentleman. He's telling me like, okay, look, this guy has years of skills in this line of work. Yeah. And he has this like, okay, you know what? I know you are new here.
Yeah.
Now just follow my lead.
Yeah.
You got this type of type of leadership.
Mm.
Yeah, he's not yelling at you every time that you screw up. He's just walking you through how to
understand the industry.
Yeah, how to understand the industry and how to survive that workplace, and most importantly, how to do your job right. Because at the end of the day, that's the goal. And in 2022, I worked with a retired labor court judge.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this experience from the lady, the national broadcaster and the one that I worked under for my internship and the man that my friend is working under right now.
Yeah.
All these have taught me that, in a lot of these positions, there are a lot of people in the public sector that are just, most of them are nearing retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these skills that they will want to share with young people. Now, the question now why is there this gap then now?
Mm.
Because the lady in the national broadcast just pointed out one thing.
Mm.
That you have to understand that, she was trained by a man, and the guy didn't pull his punches. Now, he was the yelling type. And then she said, I cried a few times, and then I realized that, okay, now, this man was trained by Xaferio, and now he had to keep up with... she has all these skills that she wants to, she would like to, to impart on anyone that will basically find themselves in their sphere of influence in terms of their line of work.
Yeah.
But the thing is, she said it in a very sarcastic way that the problem with you guys are really soft. I yell at you once, you already want to quit.
Yeah.
Some of us. But look, the thing is, I think the gap here is because I couldn't stop asking myself is, hang on a second, I have met three or four of you guys that have these skills, and you are begging for a protege that you would like to train to be the next you. But you have been keeping it all to yourself. Why? So it looks like until an internship is programmed, which is why I think I love the whole internship programs. Because I think the whole internship programs, you know, is bringing these, you know, decades of experience individuals with the, you know, with the greens, the freshman guys, you know, in one place.
Yeah.
And that generational gap now is, you know, for one, there's nothing you can do about that. You know, I think it's just a minor challenge that we can navigate, but there must be more like a will on both sides, actually, to, you know, to bridge this gap.
You know, if you look at the early 2000, when a lot of young people, especially at that time, joining the Defense Force, you just need to a grade 10 certificate by then. You don't even need to pass well. But there was a bit of a challenge, especially to veterans of the struggle, anybody who was or who is in NDF will be able to tell you that, because what have happened is that those who came from exile, most of them were promoted maybe to the first rank or the second one, but things start to be based on documents and merit. Somebody has been a veteran of the struggle for a long time but did not get an opportunity to go study, which became so unfortunate. But when you look at from 2000 to 2007, there have been a lot of saying and a lot of talks to say, no, these guys, some of them become so depressed, they're not even coming to work anymore to say, how come I fought for this country and you just came with your diploma in IT, now you are already almost a lieutenant colonel, or you're already a colonel. But I'm still there, not having a leadership position within that. But one thing that was supposed to happen, it was supposed to be like this, to say the system was supposed to accommodate these people and integrate them. To say, you have experience, you have practical experience. Let us move you based on your practical experience. Mm-hmm. But don't fight with this one. Then it become a push and pull. The young guys are on this side. The elders on this. How are we going to transfer knowledge? How are we going to transfer knowledge if we are even in the most important sector? I mean, in the most important industry. Yeah. It was supposed to be, let's come together so that we can integrate, because the fear of, no, these are young people, they found us here. They found you there, but they are coming with a new style.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you are a bedfold, but this one is a Ford Ranger. And there's nothing that you can do.
The environment also requires, you know, the skills that these young people has. And, look, I think this is where, you know, we're just being a little unfair, with regards to sort of like incorporating the veterans and the veterans into the existing power structure. And I can only imagine how challenging that is, because the environment they were operating in is different from the environment that you have now. So it requires a whole different set of skills. So they literally had to had to wield arms and know how to control. You know, they were literally at the forefront. At the front line, they were in,
And they have a point.
Yeah, they do have a point.
Yeah.
Now, the challenge now, take for example, even if you were in leadership position where you have to sort of like bring these two together, is that you have someone with skills that if you put them in a jungle, they will thrive.
Yeah.
Because they know how to navigate all kinds of terrains and how to survive even behind, behind enemy lines.
But
take for example, if you switch the work environment, where you take this, the green guys, at the front line, our veterans would shine. These guys will die from allergies on day one. Now, why I'm saying. If the work environment has a problem. It's not the person.
I hear you. No, it's a fair argument. It's a fair argument that you brought about. But when the world is moving, when people are now using drones, when people are now, you have to interpret the national security and military strategy. It's not only about you are going to shoot at the north or at the west. People are using specific coordinates that can change with time. And that is where the challenge come in. But the other thing is also when pride get involved. You know, one thing which I'm always praying about is that there's no person without pride. Let pride not blinden me so that I will not see the rationality of things. That's always something that I'm always indicating. But one thing, when you have two people that the prides are involved,
yeah,
one is young, educated, one is advanced age and experience,
yeah,
then that gap will continue to be there. Then it's not only going to be there in terms of profession, it's not only going to be there in terms of opportunities, it's also going to be there at the national level. That will impact now integration of, you know, the young people, the middle, and also the elder generation. And that can also be seen in economic indicators. It can also be seen at the performance of the country at the national level,
yeah,
to say how do you deal with social cohesion, because you don't need the sociologists to come and interpret these things, because what is social cohesion, what is a commonality of a country, what is the system striving to do, what level of affirmative actions do you have? And even if you have that level of affirmative action, it's a level of affirmative action one-sided.
Yeah.
Because we're discussing with you to say everybody is previously disadvantaged. We get the context now. When you're comparing all the things, you realize to say why you are not done with integrating women, yeah, the boy child. Now people are saying, no, let's come bring the boy child. Then you realize, no, I think everybody is previously disadvantaged,
yeah,
to look at various indicators. But I think it's tough.
Oh yeah, it is.
It's very, very tough. Yeah,
yeah. The integration part is obviously challenging, as in everything else.
Yeah.
But speaking of integration and challenging, one thing I'm not sure if she was a Kenyan or Tanzanian or just East or West African. A girl, she's abroad.
Yep.
That's where she works. And she made a very sort of like a video that I found sad, where she, now the video is captioned that a lot of people that have never actually left the country, let alone the continent, they will never understand how, staying, outside your country for an extended period of time, complicates your social life, not just at home, but not just in a country where you find yourself,
yeah,
but also your relationship with your own family. That now, what she pointed out was that when she's in Europe, for example, now she's obviously you're homesick, you're looking forward to go home sometimes,
yeah,
and you have people that they know you're not from there. So sometimes, whether in a negative way or just in a curious positive way, they will ask you about who you are, which country you're from, like identity wise, like nationality wise, who are you, cultural wise, who are you?
Why are you here?
Yeah, why here? Mm. You know, things like that. Whether it's being asked in a positive or just in a curious positive way or just in a negative way, it brings up the whole idea of, maybe I should go home. But the thing is, she realized that every time that she comes home, just after 1 week of staying with the family, most of the people that she runs in her own community are asking questions that are somewhat similar to those that she's being asked by by foreigners, except the questions are well, where have you been? I've been in, you just mentioned any country in Europe, and then after 2 weeks of staying, she's being asked, so when are you going back?
Then you are on your own.
Yeah, and you are now like, okay, now where do I belong really?
No, you are nomad.
Yeah, slowly. it slowly really screws up with your identity.
Yeah,
like, am I from here or am I from there?
No, it confuse. The most confused people is even children that are born in that process.
Yeah.
You know, they become so confused, because you don't even know which country you belong, which language you speak. You start to, it's becoming crazy.
And we can see that here at home.
Yeah. No, yeah. You start to see that something, there is always a good result when something was done with good intention.
Yeah.
If something was done with a good heart, it will always bring, good results. Even if it does not bring good result at that point, the outcome will always be different for something which was done unplanned or without any option. You may all travel at the same time. You may all maybe went with a plane, but when you went there, you did not go with the same got hurt, somebody was forced or compelled, or there's not even an option. But you had options to say, I'm going there, I'm going to study, I'm going there, I'm going to this program. If opportunity arises, who am I to say no? But I also come back home happily. There's somebody who is at home and tried all the things, and they are, and looking at statistics and probabilities of things, there might be, just for example, 3,000 Namibian young people, qualified, A student, technically, upgraded, technically skilled, but out of everything that they have tried, they have never get any of those opportunities.
Yeah.
As we are speaking now in Namibia, just take out 3,000 A students.
Mm-hmm.
Because in any generation, you always have A students. In any generation, you always have those who excel. But at the current moment, there is no guarantee of an A student to thrive. That's why those are the people that you also see that they will be forced to be part of those statistics that we are seeing. That's why at the end of the day, it's not about who went, how is the process, what impacted. It's about what you do to make sure that those who are leaving, they are leaving with good heart and they may be able to come back home. And believe me, you, every street kid that you see, not all of them is their fault. Not all of them. There are those who were ungovernable, ran away from home. There are those who did a lot of bad things.
Mm-hmm.
But there are those who are the definition of the family structure, either in that city, or either in that town, or either in that village.
Yeah, but I can only imagine. I can only imagine as a parent, with my child running away. It's gonna raise a lot of questions about where did I go wrong? I think that's pretty much every parent's nightmare. If your child turns out differently from what a productive member of society that you wanted them to turn out. I think it brings out a lot of challenges, like what could I have done differently? I think this is where it becomes a very broad social subject now, because you are now talking about either it's a child abuse that have made the child run away, or they say drug or alcohol abuse at home. Because all these addictions, dealing with addictions, parents sometimes find themselves chasing, especially as an addict, you are chasing the high more than, you barely make time for your responsibilities. As a result, the kids now start fending for themselves, and then they come to the point of where, like, okay, why am I even at home?
I can survive,
I can do just fine. I don't need these guys. But if you had the privilege, for example, of growing around responsible parents you and I did.
Yeah.
Going out there is super scary.
Yeah, it's super scary. It's a choice.
Going out there was terrifying. You were just looking forward to, because you depend on mom on everything. I think the dependency the parents created for you and me, kept pulling us back home every time that we went out. But without that dependency, if we knew that, I can take care of myself. Why do I need these guys?
Yeah.
I can just go out there. One of my favorite quotes was from Plato, when he said, We can forgive a child who is afraid of the dark.
Yeah.
But what we'll find even more confusing is an adult who is scared of light. Now, as a child, you are supposed to be terrified to be alone.
Yeah.
We all went through that. Now, as a child, you are supposed to be terrified to be alone. Okay. Now, every time that you find a child alone, you have to ask yourself, just how terrifying are the parents? The parents are more terrifying than the street.
it's a fair argument. It's really a fair argument. And when you say like that, there are also situationals that you see that what are the products of the kids or the street kids?
Yeah,
that will give you a different version. That will be even street kid light. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking it in a very happy way. To say in a process that he or she got that kid
mm-hmm.
when he was already in the street, the possibility of an apple to fall not very far from apple tree is there. That's a different scenario. But what you have indicated to say, if they were raised very well, mm-hmm. then that thing will eat up their parents, and they may even go and say, no, I mean, to look at Junior, if he's here or not there.
Yeah.
But interestingly, it's something that need expansion. It's something that we cannot take it at only at the family structure.
Value, yeah.
Not only at the family structure, because there is always a thing to say, a society is a family.
Yeah.
The basic fundamental structure of the society is a family. Then you can expand it. But if it's broken here,
yeah.
Don't expect to be fixed at regional level, because you know there was a time I was appreciating the governor of Angwena
yeah.
when I don't know what occasion when she was really deep into these things of social affairs, and they said, "Oh, parents, this is what you need to do,
mm-hmm.
children, this is what you need to do." But one thing you realize about governance is that it will boil down to the family, because after we are done working, after you are done with your hustling, where do you go? You go somewhere that that you belong, that you call family, whether whatever form, whatever structure, that is what you call family. That's why the system itself must also be able to look into that, to say, is a family structure operating? Is it still functional?
Yeah.
Because what you see in the society is a product of the family structure. That's why we should not only address things at a strategic level. The things of migration can be a product of a broken family too.
Yeah.
Because if you run away from home, then you go to the street. You can also run away from the region. Then you can then you can find yourself in the UK. You become a runner. You find yourself in the UK or in other part of the world, in Shanghai or wherever you find yourself. Yeah.
Now, you know what? We're going to need a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doi nawa nuneudo otukwetera o speciala ngeta shake ngejepa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamoili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back from that extended break. 21 minutes left. 21 minutes past the hour of 6. You're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight and David on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. So, let's go. Despite all the challenges, both social, social, cultural, economic, or sometimes even religious, depending on which country you find yourself, that is faced challenges that are, because they are, well, multiple, by those that leave their respective countries and find themselves in different countries, different regions, different zones, different continents in search of opportunities. One thing that they do, more like the that have come out of migrant labor on whichever, whether skilled or unskilled, is remittances. It turns out it's being one of those things that, a tiny spark of light in the whole migrant labor discussion. Now, migrant labor itself, it's not a bad thing. It's the motivation factor that pushes someone out of their country. That's actually, you know, that's the problem. If someone has all the qualifications in Namibia and they decide just intentionally that, you know what, I'm a teacher, for example. And I could teach in Namibia, but then I can also choose to go and teach in South Africa, Botswana, and they leave voluntarily. I mean, that's okay. But if you are just put in the corner by economic circumstances and you don't have any option but to just pack your bags and wander into the unknown, crossing your fingers with your ancestors, God, whichever you subscribe to see you through all the challenges that you're going to have to navigate halfway across the world from your relatives or anyone whose name you know. One tiny spark out of that very 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 dark example, because it's an example that's based on reality, is that turns out remittances. This is basically, you know, that e-wallet that you send to your family members, and we all do that. That you send, that e-wallet that you send to your family members every time that you get paid, assuming that you have, in the Namibian, or more like African countries type of economic circumstance, where your GDP is used to pay debt, and then you go and borrow to come and run the country. And you have a lot of people like that actually, in those situations where salary goes to paying debt, and then you go and borrow to come and pay rent and everything, and come next month, I repeat. Now, the thing is,
maybe the personal monetary statement is not corresponding.
The math is not making sometimes. We've all been there.
Yeah.
Now, see, one of the bright side, it turns out, on this whole migrant labor, that is, one of the bright side that comes out of migrant labor is remittances. This is the money that basically being sent by all the people that are working outside their home country back to their family members. Yeah. And it turns out on the African continent, those numbers are really, 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 really high. In 2022, the United Nations Office of Special Advisor on Africa, OSAA, wrote that for the last decade, remittances flow to Africa doubled, reaching $100 billion in 2022, and that's about 1.7 trillion Namibian dollars, surpassing the fund received the funds received through official development assistance channels and foreign direct investment, aka foreign direct businessmen. Yeah. So it turns out that, well, remittance is one of those things that is, but I know remittance is a good thing. It also helps with our foreign reserves because this money is being sent in US dollar denominations.
Yeah.
But one biggest challenge here is that this should be something that is done voluntarily.
Yeah.
Yes, it has a bright side. I get that.
Yeah.
But we are having this because we have economies here at home that are putting people in economic corners that are leaving them with not a lot of options but to leave their country and search for opportunity somewhere else.
Yeah, you realize that when you speak about one Namibian $1 trillion in that prediction or calculation that are given, you realize to see that. It shows that those who live, they don't hate home.
No, they don't.
They hate the situation. Yeah, they just hate the situation. It's also tell you to say people, those
and
who
live. I thought of it like
those who live, they don't hate home because they also realize that they are, you know, siblings that are being left there. They realize that they are also people that are being left. There was one story of a woman from Zimbabwe who was a business person. And when I speak about the business person, is that business that the person does not have any option?
Yeah, but
you sell what God gave to you.
Mm-hmm.
But when that lady died, the stories were started to be brought up to say no. The family of that lady, when you go to Zimbabwe, they were among those who are seen to be in the middle class. But what is interesting is that she has been sending money home. But here you realize to say the things that she's doing, they are not legal, but the person does not have option. Children are going to, when she died, children they are going to better schools.
Mm-hmm.
There is food at home. There is everything. There are good furnitures, unlike where she is when you see her. Then you realize to say, situation, people become sacrificial lambs for the survival of their own people.
Yeah.
And when somebody is in UK and sending money home, doesn't necessarily mean that he has a lot.
Yeah.
But just to say there is an appreciation of where an individual came from, but you also need to look at where the person is. Maybe it's only the rate, but you also need to look at those who went with good intention. But there is always an underlying point to say, why have you moved? Because the why matters.
Yeah.
If the why you have moved with good intention, the results will always be productive. That is the only thing that I should add into that aspect. But the numbers, they are telling you to say
the people love home.
People love home. They are not ungovernable. They love home. So that's why they are doing what they are doing. And anyhow, it will bring about changes. You find they are also lucky one who you find them because they are not going to fall in one city. They are not of the same age. They don't have same skills. Some people are just likable by nature. They get opportunities. You find them, just 1 week the guy is already supervising in McDonald's. Next time you see, he's talking about just, no, they are the same people. There are people like that. Yeah. You did not see it.
Yeah.
You can be of the same generation, but it's where you fall. And I think the personality also matters. But there are those who try from point A to B. The best thing that you can do maybe is to take care of pigs. Or maybe,
you know how I look at the desperation that pushes people into foreign lands in search of opportunities.
Yeah.
I have a very sarcastic way of looking at this. Every time that I see a bunch of guys, marching through the anti-immigration movement, I'm like, you do realize you are marching, against the people that literally ran away from a war zone.
Yeah.
We all save at USave. This week's specials are any 2 2-liter Pepsi, Miranda, or Mountain Dew soft drink just $30 Namibian, 100 grams Frisco granules instant coffee at $28.99, 1 liter long life clover milk only $22.99, pay just $20 for 8 or 100 cups clover daily snacks, 500 grams yummy polony at $26.99. USave, your low budget grocery store where good food costs less.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM,
and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. So we continue Home Run with Hemp and Dwight. See, the thing here is that migrant labor, those that leave their countries to go and search for opportunities, they leave for all kinds of reasons. There are those that from war zone countries. Now that one is very apparent. So they basically had to, they literally had to run for their lives.
Yeah.
But for a lot of stable countries, at least politically, like Namibia, the only reason to leave is economic pressure, where you have a lot of, we have seen the unemployment statistics. And one thing that pained me about the unemployment statistics is that we can split it in two main categories. Mm-hmm. You have a large number of people that are not employed, especially the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a number of the quote-unquote employed.
Mm-hmm.
There's just one problem here. In this employed category,
mm-hmm.
Another subcategory came out that was described as a large number of the people that are classified as employed
mm-hmm.
are not getting enough to mm-hmm. make ends meet.
Yeah,
that's like being at the border between employed and unemployed. But because at the end of the day, you can be classified as employed, but is it enough to basically? For you to live outside the what's that word you like to survival mode?
Yeah.
But then the thing is, a large number of this of people that fall under the employed category can barely, they don't earn enough to make ends meet, and I think the whole debt crisis,
mm-hmm.
Domestic debt crisis, home level debt crisis, or house debt crisis, can be attributed to that.
Yeah, it's a nation is a family structure. It will start there. If the family structure is the household does not have enough,
mm-hmm.
whether you are a high income earner, you are at 1%, you are going to feel that pain.
Your expenses.
You are not going to eat that money in peace. You are not going to do that because
you can if you buy a new SIM card.
No. They always find you. That's why when you look at the financial inclusion report, and my question is really to say, institution of identifying problems, we have them. We just need institutions of solving problems.
Solving the problems.
Yeah, because the statistics, they are always there.
No, I think we have the institutions of solving, of solving the problem.
We just need to work.
The thing is, the institution are as broke as we are. Because, every time we ask them, okay, now, why can't you solve this and this problem?
Mm.
What's the most common response?
Mm.
We don't have money. So, in other words, they are too broke to solve the problem that is making me do things that is, it's just one long chain of poverty.
Yeah, but you have finance to look for those numbers and interpret them.
We do. Yeah, we have.
Yeah, I think that is where we want to get into the saying. If at the end of the day somebody might want to ask you to say, what is better, what is needed? Is it finance only? Can you only be developed by finance? Or we need right skills?
Yeah.
You know, when you speak about right skills, who should define right skills?
Yeah.
Today I was just talking to Dr. Ikela on this issue of phosphate.
Yeah.
And the thing that we brought about is the relationship between academicians, scientific evidence, decision made, and also policy makers. One thing that he stated is that he started to see now institutions are coming together. But in solving the problem, as we are speaking now, if our problem is finance, do we have a commonality or do we have a common agenda with the financial institutions, mm-hmm. with the private sector on what you want to solve? Do we have that? Do we speak on the same language? Or we just say, let's wait for investor. Does the investor have in mind that I'm going to solve Namibia problems?
No, he doesn't. No,
he doesn't even think about us.
No.
He doesn't even think. He's thinking about the deal.
No, I know. I
would. Yeah. You also would not. But that is the only thing that we need to look at to say, had we invested in the right skills, Right skills match with good industries, we would be thriving. Had the institutions expanded or had private sector credit rating not subdued, as a good English that is always coming from the financial sector. Why do you have to be subdued? why can't you just say they are not given money? So we understand it very well. Yeah. You know, credit rating to private sector is subdued. Why do we have to go to the technical of economics things? Just say, and so that we can understand, to say if it's subdued, or if it means that they are not given enough so that they can expand, what can be done? If we come to that point, then we realize to say, on top of money, you have right skills,
yeah,
and also institutions that are answering to the needs. You have a green hydrogen, oil and gas, then you are producing 20,000 education graduates.
Yeah.
Where are you going? You have lithium, then you are producing not even a geoscientist, you are producing thousands of even trade graduates, just to give an example.
Mm-hmm.
Then you realize that you have a very big problem. You have mental health issues that is linked to the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But your scholarship to, or your scholarship to social work or psychology modules, I mean psychology courses, they are not the priority number one in your national funding rates.
Yeah.
Then you realize that you have a problem of, want to solve a problem with a different instrument that is not to solve that problem. You can't go to, you can't hook a springbok. You can shoot it down, mm-hmm. or you can go with a trip.
Yeah,
you can't go to an ocean with bows and arrows. You want to get the fish. You have a tool, but you are using a wrong hunting tool.
Yeah.
I think that is only way that we can do. Even with migration, I think that's the only way that we need to look into. Yeah.
And looking at it now on the African continent, I think there have been between 2020. Is it between 2013 to
2022?
Mm. There was about a 30% jump into the rise in numbers of people that are basically leaving the continent. Mm. And that's somewhat okay. At this point, we may as well just stop saying we have this number of people. We have this number of youth on the continent, because are we sure they are even here?
No, it's a good question. Which one? Ask them. Yeah. Which one?
Where are they? It's like someone just who keeps saying, "I have five kids. I have five kids," but they can't.
I think that is it's a humorous way of putting it out there,
yeah.
Because after you are done with statistics, maybe let's say after 2 years, after 1 year, you present that. Then you have already wrong information.
Yeah,
you don't have accurate information anymore, because other people have moved. We say, no, which one do you have? Which one are you talking about?
We have a very large number, vibrant number of youth.
Where are they? No, it's actually an interesting thing to look into, because measuring something which is on the move is a very difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing. And that's why up-to-date statistics,
yeah,
or timely statistics, like those advanced countries, they are very good to, they can even trace where you are, how many are in the town so far, how many are what,
yeah,
how many have a problem. But if you say that, that's why we are using the census of 2023, as we are speaking now. Of 2023.
And by the way, the African Union's immigration this report is from 2022.
And after that, where are we?
I think Ombike is in the air, is in the air on this continent. Look, some of the things that we do is really, it's just fascinating.
Hmm.
Yeah, because look, the population wise. Now this is in the conclusion of the African Union labor migration report.
Mm.
Africa is the second most populous. This is why I asked, are you sure these people are on the continent?
Why are you even presenting it?
Exactly. Labor migration accounts for the most international migratory movement, both in Africa and elsewhere in the world. That's what I referenced earlier. What they basically pointed out, that, you know what, this is not new. That's just them being clear from the get-go that this migration is not something that's new. Then they go on to point out that in preparing this edition of the report on labor migration, the report on labor migration migration statistics in Africa focus has been on improving the data quality. And which would be a brilliant idea. Then they go on to point out that Africa is the second most populous continent in the world after Asia, of course. I mean, if you look at the population of India and China, and outnumber 10-1 already. Now, the continent's population has grown steadily over the past decade, rising from 1 billion in 2010. Which corresponds to an average annual growth of 2.6%. Now, the distribution of the population shows that a slight predominance of female over males, with we have 693 million females, and again that's in 2022, and 690 million males.
What are key recommendations?
We'll get to that in a few. Now the working age population 15 years and older in Africa was estimated at 820 million in 2022, reflecting an increase of approximately 38.7% between 2010 and 2022.
That's human capital.
That is human. The question: where is it? Nigeria seems to have the biggest population, at least in 2020, in 2022. When it comes to motion again, Nigeria is the biggest, and
they're on the move.
Let's just take Namibia. Let's just take Windhoek, for example. I've had two barbers. My old barber and my current barber, they're both from DRC, I believe, because I hear them speak Lingala.
Yeah.
I hope. And I'm not very good at conversation. I just go there for my haircut. And yeah. I mean, he's good.
Yeah.
And now, here's the thing. You run into people that are that are from Zimbabwe. You run into people that are from Zambia. You run into people that are from Angola. And if you go to these countries, you'll also find Namibians. Now this is more like a labor force exchange that is not planned by any country.
Yeah.
It's just that people are out there looking for opportunities. Now. And then they come to the part that just keeps, asking me the very same, making me ask myself the very same question. Africa's labor force increased from 376 million to, in 2010, to 509 million in 2022. Throughout this period, men, consistently outnumbered women in the labor market. And this is the interesting part now. So, population-wise, just by general population of the continent, you have a lot, we have more women than men. But in the labor market, you have a flip, you have the numbers all flipped up. So you have a large number of men than women.
Where are the women? They're at home.
For a lot of countries that are at war, I don't even know how we are doing that, these statistics. Commercial break.
Okay.
Okay, my turn.
Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, aye. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Okay, hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was...
My man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give it more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, aye. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Welcome back. Migrant labor. You know, I keep going back to how terrified I was to come to Windhoek, and it's that, you know, and now I'm talking about people that, you know, left the country.
So you said you were dragged here.
I was dragged here. Yeah, you was just dragged here by someone who then left to go back to Rundu. That guy is a scam.
Can we look at the recommendation, the way forward, looking at the time?
All right. Now, what I see here, what you just find at the bottom here is a conclusion.
Yeah.
You have data collection and consolidation. That's just how they collected the information and how, because it was put together, compiled in collaboration with the International Labour Organization. But the thing is, the International Labour Organization released their report on labour migration, this year in February. Mm-hmm. Now, the African Union guys, maybe we're waiting for GIZ to give us, money for a report for this year.
African Union?
Yeah, I swear, everything we do, GIZ.
Without it?
We cooked. And the irony is, look, this is the most painful part about, I always think about Africa.
Mm.
Africa is like this house, it's a mansion, with a well-stuffed, it's a well-stocked kitchen.
Mm.
It has a salt, sugar, and all types of ingredients.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no one in the house knows how to cook. Now we have to rely on a stranger who is living in Kambashu to come and take our ingredients, cook them, and then come back and sell us the food.
Yeah, but that's the end of mansion.
You can see the ingredient is right here. We still need skills to cook. And we are relying on the person that we are selling the food to give us enough money for us to afford the stuff.
Yeah.
And after we afford the stuff, we will also have to invest in our skills to know how to cook. That's when we will start cooking our own food in our own kitchen.
Very, very, very difficult. Very, very long process. And most of us, we don't have that capacity to cook, or we may have wedding, but we don't have that capacity to cook.
But you can only not have the capacity for so long.
Have you seen?
But at this point, we have turned. We don't have the capacity into a national anthem.
Have you seen what the Minister of Health said today? I think you should go and listen to that speech.
Mm.
She gave not only a good speech in terms of oratoric skills. We know she has those oratoric skills, which is really beautiful.
But she has an advanced degree.
one of the things that she said is that gone are the days that Africa will continue to rely on others in things that they can manufacture themselves in getting things that they can manufacture themselves at home. Yeah. And if you listen to the speech communicated, you realize to say it was a well thought statement,
mm-hmm.
because it is not saying gone are the days that Africa depend on external worlds, but mm-hmm. gone are the days that we are getting things that we can do on our own.
Yeah,
that's why she spoke about the issue of health system coordination of the health system and the response to.
And
it can come down to say, what have we been speaking about? What have we spoken about? And what are we doing about it? It was so critical to say, other people are asking a question to say, we have been saying that story of gone are the days, which is still a story. The question is that we're now going to start to cook our own food.
Okay. There's again, elephant in the room here. Yeah, and the elephant.
As long as the elephant is not white, I'm not scared of it.
Thank God. Actually, thank God to... Thank God, you have Eagle FM to just point out the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Guys, there are a lot of things that we'd like to accomplish as a continent. The problem is we don't have the money. That's one of our biggest hurdle is we don't have the money.
But the money, we are also wasting the money.
I mean, isn't that the problem? The thing is, we don't have the money because we're stealing most of it.
we have it in our private pockets.
Yeah, we have it in our private pockets.
Yeah. But no, having it is a different thing.
Yeah.
No, we have it in the private pocket. We are getting more money and we still want more money. But that should not be, and I think we should also move away from, that should not be the barrier if we want to get into, because
we'll need a lot of nail cutters. The thing is, there's a lot of long nails now. Our local nail cutters, our local nail cutter, like anti-corruption. I call them our local nail cutter. They have cut a few nails. We have a few of them in the fishing industry. But the thing is, Africa is rich in natural resources.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that we are having the discussion of illicit financing.
Yeah.
Illicit financing. Look, the reason why I'm saying we need a lot of nail cutters is that I don't think illicit financing is a Tura boy problem.
A Tura boy
doesn't have enough money to channel out of the country to go and hide in some British overseas offshore territories.
It's
a Klein Wund and Ludwig sort of problem.
It's not white corruption. How do you call it? It's a grand corruption that is coordinated. That's why you differentiate between the gangs, cartels, and syndicates. You realize to see we have a lot of tables.
Sophistication.
There's a lot of level of sophistication.
Yeah.
And I think when we ask to say we have money in our private pocket, how do you deal with that issue? Because you need to deal with the problem, because if you have a lot of money that you are losing, you don't even know. Because do you know that the statistics of money lost through cyber crimes, they are still predictions.
They are still predictions. You don't know how much is
in. Yeah, and the money that we lose through illicit financial flow. Some countries are even hiding data because they are scared of being grey listed.
Yeah.
But the situation will always show what will happen. But if maybe we deal with that. And the other thing, you also need to look at the broader perspective to say, what are the external factors? Because if we don't deal with external factors, we may end up punching each other here at home. But there are external factors, deliberately planned strategy that is being, being implemented to make sure that you are disorganized, you don't trust your own intelligentsia, and you don't trust that you can have potential, that you can advance your own country. I think external factors must also be dealt with, because they are acting so intelligently that you cannot even get them.
Yeah.
Because external factors that are disrupting African progress, if you look into that, you can talk about illicit financial flow. You can talk about ungovernable international companies. You can talk about other government who put a blind eye. How come you are in diplomatic relation with me and you are selling guns to the terrorists that are fighting me? How possible is that? And we are shaking hands on this side, and it's quite chaotic. to look into that. That's why sometimes we don't really need to look at only internal factors, but external factors, you can't see them, but they always impact you, and they are taking along to and you cannot even really realize that it's an external factors. But I think that is where we also need to look at them.
Look, I listened to Ramaphosa's speech when he was talking about when he was addressing South Africans on the anti-immigration movement.
Mm-hmm.
That speech is still out there. He's saying a lot of things that he's, but then he's not beating around the bush.
Mm-hmm.
He's beating around an entire equatorial rainforest. And he's just, he's talking about we don't want some. Let's not, fall for the forces that would like that want to use our grievances to destabilize our country, like Your Excellency. That's a lot of bushes, but I think that's one of the challenges of being in public office, I guess, especially in high offices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, you're gonna have to be very careful with your technical language, because if you just go on like. In this mentioning names, now you'll have to prove it.
Yeah, mentioning names is also very dangerous, because you need to make sure that they will not come in and they lift you.
They'll
give you a free lift to.
I mean, you'll commit suicide by running yourself over with a train. I mean, who was driving it?
Yeah, I think that is also being careful, but you also look at diplomacy.
Yeah.
At unequal ground. You can have all these things that we speak about, the Vienna Conventions on diplomatic relations. You can speak about countries trade equally or respect each other equally.
Mm-hmm.
But you also realize that sometimes our leaders are also in difficult positions, because there is always a big man of politics in international affairs.
Yeah.
Then they have to tread carefully so that we can also survive. Because if you are brutally honest, if you speak frankly,
mm-hmm.
and you are straightforward and you know exactly what you want, you may end up ranks of a dictator. Then mm-hmm. your own people are the ones who are coming to take you. I think it's a very dangerous zone also. That's why they are trending very carefully, because I love reading speeches,
mm.
especially at the international level. They are carefully written to make sure that you are walking on ice. But interestingly, when you also go and read between the lines, you realize to say that the point is still there.
Mm-hmm.
To say, I don't want you to do this, but in a soft way. That's why if you don't just read and go home,
mm-hmm.
go look at the words that are chosen. And they are very picky.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the international summit, the UNGADEM,
mm-hmm.
when AU and EU are meeting, the choice of words will tell you to say we have a problem, but we are careful, but we also do not want you to continue doing what you are doing, but let's shake hands. That's why I think it's very difficult for leaders. Also, that's why you see Ramaphosa is quite of he's a very smooth operator. I think with diplomacy, he has been there.
Yeah. He's a trained lawyer.
Yeah.
All right, that brings us to the end of today's home run. Shout out to Helm Dwight, Equal FM, David and Ngushinado for speaking to us on this subject. And until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Equal FM. From yours truly, y'all have a good one.